You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Thursday, September 24th. This is The Christian Commute. I am your host, Seth Dunn. And if the audio quality isn't very good, it's because I'm doing it on Dollar General headphones. I drove Studio D today, and my good headset that Jeff bought me is still in Studio B. So rather than deprive you all of a Christian commute, I stopped by Dollar General and bought some $5 microphone headphones. It's actually a pretty good deal. It was two for $5, because two came in the pack, but I don't know how long equipment of such low quality will last. But hopefully I can just keep them stocked away in this car as an emergency backup. And because of that, I'm starting the show on a side street. If I get to the show topic or the show title today, and I doubt I will, I'll talk about that Democrat lobbyist from the ERLC. If you want to Google him, his name is Stephen Harris. I wrote an article about it. But I'm expecting a phone call. Remember yesterday's, maybe 2 or 3 days ago when I did the show on Financial Peace University and I talked about debt? Well, I'm about to go into some debt because I want to buy a house. So I'm expecting a call from a financier, a mortgage broker. So that's that. He's supposed to call me in the next few minutes. So I'll probably have to interrupt the show to take that call, which will put me even further behind schedule. So I will likely get to the question in the inbox. I have a question in the inbox about the devil. And I'll get to that after we finish the Bible chapter review. Today's Bible chapter review comes from Mark 3. Jesus heals on the Sabbath. So we are in Mark chapter 3, having finished Mark chapter 2 yesterday. And if it seems odd that I haven't started the Bible chapter review yet, it's a little uncomfortable. I'm on the side street in the rain, and I don't like to start the Bible chapter review in the side street. But I think I've got a good grasp. Ooh. I'm not going line by line anyway. So this is a story of Jesus healing on the Sabbath. You will recall from our previous Bible chapter review in Mark chapter 2, Jesus was criticized, or really I guess his disciples were criticized, for picking the heads off of grain on the Sabbath. And Jesus made the point that the Sabbath was for man, not man for the Sabbath. And he said the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. So in Mark chapter 3, we find Jesus in a synagogue. Jesus has entered the synagogue. Anybody want to guess what the Greek word for synagogue is? Synagogue. Synagoge. It's one of the easy ones to remember, so now you know some Greek. Synagoge. Jesus enters the synagogue on the Sabbath, and there is a man there with a withered hand. I guess his hand's all crushed up like Bob Dole's hand. Maybe like William Lane Craig's hand. William Lane Craig's hands are messed up. He's got some kind of neurological disease. So he's got a withered hand, which would be troublesome now, very troublesome now. But think about living in an agrarian society with a withered hand. Think about what it would do to you with regard to work, working in the fields or building stuff. I could have a withered hand and probably still work on the computer. But in any time, no one wants to have a withered hand, and there is the man in the synagogue with a withered hand. And the Pharisees are in the synagogue, and here's what they see. They see a healer, they see Jesus, and they see somebody who needs healing, the man with a withered hand. And instead of being happy that this man could be healed by Jesus, they watch Jesus to see if he will heal on the Sabbath so that they can accuse him. They're just waiting for him to do something wrong. Jesus sees the guy there and he asks, obviously sensing their hearts, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? To give a life or kill? And nobody answers him. Nobody says anything. And this makes Jesus angry. It says Jesus was angry and grieved at their hardness of heart. So these Pharisees, they're hard-hearted. They follow the law to a T, but they don't seem to care about people. They seem to care about more about themselves. And this, not only does just grieve Jesus, it makes him angry. Some people think being Christian is you're supposed to be like Zen Buddha. Like I said, Zen Buddhist, and you never get angry and you're never happy. You're just Zen all the time. Everything is broken, so why should I be afraid of the broken state of the world? I control my state. Like that you're supposed to have some kind of Zen attitude, like the pagans. No! Jesus can be angry, and we as Christians can be angry too. It's about what you're angry about. Is your anger righteous? And Jesus is angry and grieved at their hardness of heart. And then he tells the man, stick out your hand. Guy does, or stretch, he says, stretch out your hand. The guy stretches out his hand and he's healed. And that's what the Pharisees were waiting for, Jesus to heal on the Sabbath. And it says they then conspired, or they then began to conspire with the Herodians against Jesus. So the Herodians, you got to think, who's the king? King Herod. The Herodians are a sect, a political sect, that would have been in favor of King Herod. Herodians. So now the Pharisees and the Herodians are conspiring against Jesus. So the Herodians are of a group that supports the temporal authority. They support King Herod, the client king of Israel at the time. Herod, I think, call him Herod the Tetrarch. I believe he was Idumean. He was... And this was, by the way, this was common in empires. He was somebody that an empire had put there to preserve order who looked like the people there. So he's kind of like a puppet king. So Rome rules Jerusalem, but Rome is pagan. So I know, we'll put a Semitic person, like a Jewish person, even though Herod was Idumean, not technically Jewish. But we'll put somebody with Jewish descent in charge as the king in name only. So Herod is in charge as the Tetrarch, and the Herodians are the people of the temporal authority, the government authority of that party. Not that they have it, but they support Herod. And then the Pharisees, they would have been the spiritual authorities. They're the law keepers and telling everybody what they need to do. But now it's Jesus who's getting attention. And we know from later on in the Gospels, at one point they want to make Jesus king, but he won't let them. So these people obviously feel threatened by Jesus. Some kind of Johnny come lately and they don't like it. And with great sadness, because he's grieved, Jesus heals this man's hand. And I want you to think about it. If you go back into the Old Testament and look at the Sabbath regulations, you're not supposed to work. It's a day of rest. But it even says, if your ox is in a ditch on the Sabbath, you can get him out. If your ox is in a ditch on the Sabbath, you can get him out. And what that means is, so you got an animal and you depend on that animal for your livelihood. And if he falls in a ditch and he's stuck, well, you can't say, well, I guess I'll let him drown because it's the Sabbath. I'm not supposed to exert myself. No, you're not supposed to plow with the ox on the Sabbath, but if he gets stuck in a ditch, you need to get him out because you're going to need him Sunday through Friday to do your work. So it was even lawful to save the life of an animal on the Sabbath. Here Jesus is going to heal the withered hand of a human being, and the Pharisees resent him for it. That's what hard-heartedness will do to a man. Right? So then Jesus withdraws to the sea. Again, going out into a rural place which could handle the crowds better. And there's crowds coming from everywhere, from Jerusalem, Judea, Idumea, Syre, and Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon. So they're just throngs of people, and they just want to touch him. They just want to brush up against him so they can be healed. And Jesus tells his disciples, we got to get a boat so they can sail out away from the people if the crowd is too big. And Mark also mentions this. He's coming across unclean spirits. And the unclean spirits yell out, you are the Son of God. And then Jesus will quiet them down and say, don't tell anybody that. Messianic secret again. But the unclean spirits know exactly who Jesus is. And they're yelling it out. He's the Son of God. And with that, we will end the Bible chapter review. This guy has not called me yet. Will he owe me some money or not? With that, we'll end the Bible chapter review. I'm going to stop and get something to eat. I probably will. And we will move on to the inbox question. It's a two-parter. For Jeff, I'll do it. And I think one is a given. He's not really asking a question. Everybody knows this. The first part is, can Satan cause things to happen in the world? In other words, can Satan be a causal force? And I think the answer to that is clearly yes. We can cause things to happen in the world, so Satan can too. So Satan can cause things to happen in the world, yes, Jeff. So his second question is, can Satan inspire a false prophet to know a true prophecy or an accurate prophecy? Can Satan inspire a false prophet to know a true prophecy? So let's, before we answer, let's dig back and let's lay a foundation, because there's always a rub with Jeff. Let's go to Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 16 says, if a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord and it does not come to pass, do not fear that prophet. That's Deuteronomy 18. Do not fear that prophet. Deuteronomy 3 says, if a prophet entices you to chase after other gods, he's a false prophet and you need to put him to death. So what's the test of a true prophet in Deuteronomy 16? Well, that is prophets come true. Prophecies come true. But Jeff is observing, hey, Satan knows things. Satan's powerful. Couldn't he make something happen and then have a prophet prophesy and then it comes to pass? But he's really a false prophet. And Jeff, that's an episode of Batman the Animated Series. It's not Satan. That was, by the way, one of my favorite cartoons, probably one of the best cartoons ever for children and adults, is Batman the Animated Series. And in one of these episodes, Bruce's rich friends, because remember Bruce Wayne's a millionaire, they start following this guy named Nostromos, who kind of dresses like Rasputin. He purports to be a seer. And they start a group of brethren, and they pull their money together, because Nostromos is predicting doom. And he says they all need to divest their money and put it all in Nostromos' care so they can save it and save the world when doom comes. Really, Nostromos is trying to steal their money. And these guys believe in Nostromos because he makes prophecies and they're coming true. But really, Nostromos is setting them up. In one prophecy, Nostromos prophesizes that something bad's going to happen to Bruce Wayne. And he's a scoffer, non-believer. Something bad's going to happen to him. Well, Nostromos has a thug who works for him who goes around setting up all these prophecies. So the thug cuts the elevator cable when Bruce Wayne gets in the elevator. He would have died, but he's Batman, so he's awesome at stuff. He survives. And then Bruce Wayne goes undercover, or pretends to join the cult, but he's really investigating Batman. And Batman finds out that Nostromos is really a con man, and he has a thug working for him. And what they're doing to bamboozle people is they're creating they're making a prophecy, and then they're making it come true on their own. So yeah, charlatans and phonies are out there. In this case, the little twist or nuance with Jeff's situation is Satan is a divine being. And well, supernatural, I'll say. I won't say divine. A supernatural being, not just Nostromo's stuff. And he is causing things to pass, and he's letting a false prophet know that he's going to do it. And the question is, well, wait a second. The test of a prophet is if his prophecies come true. But Satan can, in theory, create false prophets. Go to Acts 16. Paul is walking around on a missionary journey. I forget who's with him. Silas or somebody like that. Barnabas, Silas, I don't remember. And they pass a slave girl who has an unclean spirit. And the owners of this slave girl make quite the profit through her divinations. So they're doing fortune telling through this unclean spirit, this possessed girl. So we presume that the spirit is somehow telling people things that only, or that nobody would know but them. And this happens today in cold reading. When people figure out, hot reading. When somebody figures something out about you, they ask questions about you, then they tell the supposed psychic and he knows about you. So this spirit that this unclean girl has is making divinations and giving oracles through the power of a demon. And people are paying for it. So it doesn't seem like her divinations are phony. They're just from a demonic source. And Paul casts out the demon. She goes, these guys are preaching the way of salvation. You're servants of God. And it annoys Paul that this unclean spirit is yelling at him. So he casts out the demon. So there's biblical evidence, Jim. We don't have to ask, can Satan do this? Here we have a demon doing it. So do we have a contradiction now? Because Deuteronomy says that the test of a prophet is that the thing comes to pass. In chapter 18, but here's the thing, Jeff. Deuteronomy 18 says, if the prophet speaks in the name of God. So anybody could just claim to be a prophet and make prophecies, and Satan could help them do it. But a prophet who speaks in the name of God must, one, not lead people away from the one true God, and two, he's speaking in the name of God. And when you're doing that, it's saying God is going to do something. Remember, prophecy is about what God is going to do or what God is going to make come to pass. A miraculous act or providential sovereign act of God. So here, we could have a doomsday prophet now say, I prophesy that the Hoover Dam is going to bust in the next 3 months and Nevada is going to be flooded and the power is going to go out and thousands will be killed. And then the devil could use his devil powers or possess somebody to bomb the Hoover Dam and it would come to pass. But that's not a miracle of God. If the prophet said God is going to himself destroy the Hoover Dam, just like when Noah said, or God told Noah, the world's going to flood. God's going to flood the world. God's going to do it. So if some prophet says, God's going to destroy the Hoover Dam, can the devil go destroy it? Yahweh himself is going to destroy the Hoover Dam. But the false prophet really knows Yahweh's not going to destroy it. It's really going to be the devil. And then when the Hoover Dam is destroyed, now we have a false prophet who spoke in the name of God and it came true. So we're supposed to believe he's a true prophet even though he's a false prophet? Well, Jeff, God's all-powerful and omniscient. Don't you think that God could stop Satan from his scheme? I mean, think about it. Batman stops people. The Scooby-Doo gang foils schemes. I would have gotten away from it if it wasn't for you kids. So if there is one of these convoluted situations where not only is the prophet making a prophecy, but he's prophesying in the name of God, saying that God is going to do something, and then the devil's all set up to do it, God can stop him. Or God can say, oh, it really wasn't me. It was the devil. So yes, the devil can cause things to happen just like we can, but just as God can stop us from doing things, He can stop the devil. And I think Jeff's question has a double rub, is if, and this would be, well, if God can stop the devil, why doesn't He? But that's where we get into the problem of evil and being creatures endowed with will and God's permissive will and God's decretive will. That really goes outside of this question itself. That's more of a general question. Why does anything bad happen? And that's not what Jeff's asking. He's not asking a problem of evil question. He's asking a question specifically about false prophecy. And I think I have given a biblically grounded answer. And look at this. Look at this. I've got time to talk about Stephen Harris. Okay, so you guys know I've been preaching against the ERLC for years. New listeners, what is it? The ERLC is the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Supposedly, it's supposed to go fight for religious liberty, because Baptists value religious liberty, because we have been a persecuted people before. So you'd think they'd be out supporting John MacArthur in his fight against California authorities to shut his church down, but they've been nowhere to be found. Sorry. It's raining. There's a 18-wheeler pointing the wrong direction on the interstate off the side. Oh my gosh, there must have been some big wreck. And I just had to stop in the rain. So, okay, so good news. I'm going to have time to finish this now. Back to the ERLC, now that I'm still alive. Are you kidding me? There's a Cross Point City Church person in front of me and a white Highlander. I wish I could tell them how they should go to a different place. Anyway, ERLC. So the ERLC budget's about $4 million a year, and they're supposed to contend for religious liberty. But really, it's just kind of useless. It's run by some progressive named Russell Moore, who is a former Democratic staffer, who said he would have liked to marry a woman like Hillary Clinton. The 1990s version, as if that's any better. And the theory is that there's liberal drift from the intellectuals in the ERLC. So the ERLC, imagine a bunch of bow tie wearing intellectuals in Washington, D.C. lobbying. Like, why do we need lobbyists? Why does Jesus need a lobbyist? Why does the Southern Baptist Convention need lobbyists now? They're lobbyists. And they're unneeded, and we as Baptists should send that $4 million to international missionaries, but we don't. So, I'm going to tell you this. I don't think the ERLC is needed regardless if it's run by conservatives or progressives like Russell Moore. But I want to point this out. A couple years ago, the ERLC hired a policy director. A director of policy. Reported to a vice president, I think. To live in Washington, D.C. So, what do you think a director-level person makes in Washington, D.C.? I know what a director-level person makes in Calhoun, Georgia, and it's a lot, and our cost of living is lower. So you got a guy who's making probably, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but the ERLC keeps all its salary secret, you got a guy making at least $100,000. And he's being paid for by Southern Baptist tithes and offerings. The money you put in the plate to support your church, that's what's paying this guy's salary. And his job is to lobby the Senate. Anybody want to know what he was supposed to lobby the Senate about? Pro-life issues. All right, good, but that's held up in the Supreme Court. The Senate couldn't pass an abortion ban if it wanted to. It could, but the Supreme Court would just invalidate it. But then he also lobbies about criminal justice reform. Why are Southern Baptists, why do we care about criminal justice reform? Like prison reform? Like, Is this a gospel issue, prison reform? It's a social justice issue. He also, listen to this, was tasked with lobbying against, dun-dun-dun, payday loans. And by the way, payday loans are an usurious ripoff. But should it be the mission of the Southern Baptist Convention to send lobbyists to the Senate to lobby against payroll loans? We're going to take a stand against predatory lending. Listen, I bet most Southern Baptists don't even know what that is. And I'm glad, by the way, I'm glad I've never needed a payday loan. But how would you like to be somebody who needed one and couldn't get one because the government overregulated it? If you don't want a payday loan, don't get one. Social justice. So this social Justinian, to borrow a term from Daryl Harrison, worked as a director from the ERLC. Now, he had a Master's of Divinity from Bowtie Land in Louisville, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. But you got to get it. This guy had a degree from Vanderbilt, and then he had another one from Yale, and he was working on one from Harvard. And by the way, those are all good schools. But if I said, I know a person who went to Vanderbilt, Harvard, and Yale, would you guess if he was a liberal or a conservative politically? We'd all guess liberal, right? Because those are super expensive liberal arts schools that produce liberals. So anyway, Stephen Harris no longer works for the ERLC. Of course, it wasn't really announced loudly, and you could still find, if they haven't scrubbed it yet, you could find it 2 days ago, Stephen Harris's bio on the ERLC website. And quite frankly, he looks like somebody from the Nation of Islam with the way he dresses. All right, here's this mortgage broker. All right, sorry, the mortgage broker called. Wheels are in motion. I'm picking up some Chick-fil-A. I ordered Chick-fil-A while he called me. So I'm sitting in the Chick-fil-A parking lot talking about this guy doing payday loans, how he looks like a member of the Nation of Islam. All right? Do you know where his name popped up a couple days ago? Anybody want to guess? As a speaker or featured person at an Evangelicals for Joe Biden event. That is Evangelicals for Joe Biden, the most pro-choice, pro-homosexual presidential ticket Biden-Harris in the history. Why would an evangelical who worked for the ERLC support a pro-choice president? Joe Biden wants to fund Planned Parenthood. I'm not going to say he's for abortion, but he's for abortion. And Stephen Harris is platforming for this guy, for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, who will bust hell wide open when they die if they don't repent and get saved. Along with Jim Wallace of Sojourners. So this guy is clearly a social Justinian. And when we think, those of us who know what the ERLC is as Baptists, we think, well, it's our pro-life organization. They're against abortion. No, man, they lost the fight about abortion a long time ago. So now they're trying to do social justice stuff they can win. You know, it's the womb to tomb idea. Like, we can't keep you from killing babies, but we'll make sure they get welfare and nobody predator loans them, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't like to get political on the show. I've said that a million times, but I'm going to tell you this. I don't think you can be a Christian of any degree of discipleship. Maybe you got saved yesterday. I'm talking about somebody who knows the Bible, been in church for years, got saved a long time ago. I don't think you can be a Christian and vote Democrat. Why? Because Democrats are the party of baby murder. It is not about economic policy. You can be a Christian and want a bigger government, more regulation, higher taxes. Fine. If that's what you think is best for society, if you think my vote, in order to make a more prosperous and free society, is to vote for Democrats because they're the party of big government and regulation and socialistic tendencies, if that's what you think, then fine. But when it comes to a party that unapologetically advocates for and supports the murder of the unborn, you cannot be for them. You can be as communitarian as you want, But you can't be for the party of abortion. But the ERLC, listen, this Harris didn't have a change of heart. He is who he is. Remember that Romeo Crennel interview from the NFL a few years ago? They are who we think they are. Stephen Harris is who he is. He is who we think he is who we think he is, and he is who he was. Working for years at the highest level of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission in Washington, D.C., in the swamp. The swamp makes swampers, and not the good kind from Muscle Shoals. In the swamp, lobbying the Senate, you're paying for a Democrat. Listen, I don't want to pay for a Republican to lobby the Senate, quite frankly. I want my money to go to missions. But all you guys, I'm not paying for him because I stopped giving to the cooperative program years ago. But you guys, paying for a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris supporting Democrat. And here's the thing. I dare you to go to your pastor and demand that your church stop giving to the ERLC. You know what your company man, SBC pastor, will do to you? He will roadblock you, and he will keep giving your money to the ERLC. And if you try to go before the church to get the budget changed, he'll roadblock you. Watch it happen. Watch it happen. And it is that mentality which keeps the wicked people funded. And with that, I'm going to end the show. God bless. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Keep your questions coming to SethDunn88@gmail.com or 470-315-0875. And always remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to SethDunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.